Hello and welcome to this second NWSL Championship game preview. Yesterday we had quotes from some of the players that are going to be involved in tomorrow's game, and today I have my colleague from Equaliser Soccer, Dan Laletta, to preview the game with me. Dan, it's been a few busy days out here in Houston. The humidity is quite high, but how are you enjoying it? It's all good, right?
Yeah, pretty good. We went out to portions of the open training on Friday. I lose track of the days of these things, but it's a little hot and humid down here. But if that's all you have to complain about, life's pretty good.
Well, yesterday I released a podcast and it had some quotes from players from both sides, Megan Oyster and Whitney Church from the Spirit, and Abby Ertzig and Abby Dolkemper from Western New York giving their insight into the game. I guess I'll open with kind of your thoughts ahead of the game tomorrow, where you think the game could be won and lost, and I guess who your favourites are going into that game as well.
Yeah, I came in thinking the Spirit were the favourites, and I think if you kind of poll people around town, I would say the Flash of the favorites, just based on the people that I've spoken to anyway. I feel like it's a midfield must win for the Spirit because, first of all, that's the engine of their team. The Lohman, Huster, Naren midfield can really control a game. And they play, if not the best soccer, the most attractive soccer probably that we've ever seen in this league when they're on their game, which, as we saw toward the end of the season, is not always the case. And the Flash are deadly on the counter, and they've got great speed. So the only way to beat speed is to make speed chase rather than speed hold on to the ball. So I think it's a must win in midfield for the Washington Spirit. And I think if they do that, not only does that keep the Flash speed off the board, but I do think the Flash defending is a bit of a problem. I thought it was a problem in Portland last weekend, and they got away with it. And it was a problem during that long winless streak that they had. And so I think look to the midfield. If Naren especially can control play in the midfield, it should be a good day for the Spirit. If the Spirit start chasing and turning the ball over, it'll be a long day for them.
Does the game become even more unpredictable because of the way Western New York Flash played last week? We don't know how they're going to be defensively, but we do know that on the counter-attack, as you say, they play with pace and they are lethal, aren't they?
Well, I don't know about unpredictable, because we've known that's how they played for much of the season. You know, remember, they actually started the season slow. They didn't score a goal in the run of play for, I believe, the entire month of April. They had a win on a PK against Kansas City, but they didn't score in the run of play very much early in the season. But they figured out how to best utilize their weapons. And I think that's the beauty of a Paul Riley coach team, is that he will take what he has and do the best that he can with what he has rather than trying to force a system on the players. Now, it didn't work very well last season in Portland, and we all know that, but I feel like he's really done a great job with that team. Now, it could be maybe not unpredictable, but a little bit wild. It could turn into a track meet, but as Riley told me yesterday, the weather in Portland was completely suitable for the type of game they played. Said it was about 68. Apologies to your British fans, I can't do the conversion in my head, but he said it was about 68 and a little damp, and it'll be an awful lot hotter for this game, so probably you won't see anything quite as outrageous as we saw in Portland.
You mentioned Paul Riley there. I spoke to him on Thursday during the media day, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. Mark Parsons was, I think, deservedly named Coach of the Year based on how he turned around that Portland team from the one that Paul Riley left, but we know the quality that he's got. Would we say that Paul Riley was probably a close runner-up based on the fact that no one really expected Western New York to do what they've done this season? The fact that he came into the team so late, I think it was just after the draft. I don't think he was at the draft, was he?
No.
He said to us, and I think he spoke to you as well, that he had no expectations at the beginning of the season. You can believe that if you like or not. I spoke to a few of the players. They all backed that up, saying we had no goals, we had no expectations. But how well has he done? Because to bring them to a championship game, having come in so late, having had to turn around a team that was below par last year, deserves a lot of credit, doesn't he?
Well, first on the Coach of the Year, I voted for Parsons. I thought Riley and Christy Holly were right there. And I think Jim Gabara probably gets shortchanged in that trio because he did a very good job as well. From the award perspective, in the age where we analyze everything in real time, I feel like a coach like Paul Riley won't get enough credit for the course of the season, because if you go back to July 9th was that last win before the long stretch without a win. They were, I don't remember what place they were in, but they were firmly inside the playoff line, And most of us would have said, yeah, Paul Riley is a definite candidate for Coach of the Year. But because we discuss it now every single day, we're like at halftime, sometimes you might get a tweet that says, oh, he's not Coach of the Year now, is he? That seven-match winless streak, I think, hurt his candidacy because we analyze it so closely, and it's hard to go back and say, what was this team supposed to be at the beginning of the season? What is it now? And I think he's done an extraordinary job because, number one, no one will go on the record with this, but nobody wanted to play there the last two seasons. The relationship between the players and Aaron Lyons deteriorated immensely. They needed confidence. And remember now, you've got five players will start this game on Sunday who were drafted in 2015. Mackenzie Doniak will start this game. She was drafted in 2016. It's not easy to mold all that talent into a team that can effectively beat teams like Portland. In Portland, 20,000 people giving up a two-goal lead, fighting back, and still believing that you can push forward. So I think Riley has done a fantastic job with this team.
And we should, as you say, talk about Jim Gabara because he probably has been shortchanged in terms of being talked about in Coach of the Year conversations. He had pressure going into his role as well, didn't he? Off the back of Mark Parsons taking that Spirit team to two playoff semi-finals in a row, the only way that he could better what Parsons has done is to take them to a championship game, and he's done that. So he deserves a lot of credit as well. Where do you think it's been key for him in taking that team to the final this year?
And it was unique for him too, because as he will remind us constantly, this is the first time he's had a club and hasn't been able to put it together himself. Now, he actually had more say over the club than Riley, because he got there in October. And Riley didn't go, as you say, I think it was in the middle of February before they actually made the announcement that he was hired. But most of the key pieces for Washington were already there. And sure, he had the luxury of having a lot of talent on that team. But he also has done a splendid job balancing the fact that pretty much every position, I mean, I think they're the deepest team I've ever seen in women's club soccer. Not maybe the best, but the deepest, because they can literally go to every position and put somebody else. They might not have one for one all the way where you can take out 11 and put in 11. The roster's not even that big, but you can go to literally every position and there's somebody not starting that is a quality player that can step in and start, and you won't look at that and say that's a drastic and major hole. The only really irreplaceable player on that team is probably Crystal Dunn, and they did pretty well when Dunn wasn't around. So the fact that he's been able to mold that, he's got Canadian players who just won Olympic bronze medals and they come back in and they can barely even crack the lineup again. That's not an easy thing to balance. Also, remember that he came in off the heels of two seasons at Sky Blue with no playoffs. They were not very good last season. They came out of the blocks dull more often than not. There was just a vibe around that team that wasn't very positive, and that's obviously not the case now in Washington.
I was looking at the goal-scoring statistics for the two teams. Both had their fair share. Western New York were up there for sure. Washington Spirit, I think their top goal scorer was Estefania Bonini with 5. Obviously, Lynn Williams, we know, scored a lot. I think it was 14. Jess McDonald got 10. Could the key be for Washington that they haven't necessarily relied on one or two players? The goals have been spread around a little bit more.
Oh, 100%. And what's remarkable about that is a year ago, it was the kick it to Crystal Dunn show. And Dunn scored 15, and I think the rest of the team had 16. And basically, if Dunn didn't score, they were in trouble. And the fact that they've been able to adapt to that and that Crystal Dunn has been able to adapt to that. And I did think there was a little stretch in the season when Dunn was still on 0 goals and maybe she was pushing a little bit, taking on defenders when she shouldn't. But in general, and she's one of them. I said this to someone last night. You can make an argument that she's the best player in the league. I probably wouldn't make that argument, but I think it's a makeable argument. She does so many other things. But the fact that she's been willing to give up that goal-scoring responsibility, which isn't to say that she's not trying to score, but the fact that she's been able to just mold herself into a team player. Not, you know, I'm sure she always was a team player, but when you score 15 or 31 goals, it's easy to go into the next season and say, you know what, I've got to score, give me the ball, and she has not been that player at all.
I spoke to Megan Oyster and Whitney Church. Those listening to this that heard the show that I put out yesterday will have heard me speak to them about the balance of the side. Stingy in defence, scored not as many goals as Western New York and Portland, but they scored enough goals to get them where they are. When you look at them compared to the Western New York Flash, could it be that balance you think that could potentially see them over the line?
Sure, I do. Some of it will come down to who Gubera will start in back, which, do you ever remember a final where a team doesn't know who their back line is going into a game, and not because of injury or because somebody stinks, because everybody's pretty good back there. And I do think the one area where they will struggle in this game is they don't have the speed in the back to deal with the flash. So if Williams and McDonald and Doniak get the ball in space, that's going to be a long day no matter who's out there. But watch out for Caprice Didasco, left back for the Spirit. She's had some rough games, but when she's on her game, she's one of the more underrated players in the league.
Yeah, agreed, and I actually picked her out as one of the players to look out for at the start of the season. We were both at the media day on Thursday. I will be going back to England and suggesting that certain things are done similar, because I thought it was the access was incredible. There's no doubt about that. We got to speak to pretty much whoever we wanted. What were the main takeaways that you took from the media day in terms of the players that you spoke to and the conversations that you had? Was there anything that stood out for you and really made you think about the game tomorrow?
If I can be honest, yesterday, day after the media day, when there were only a few of us at the open training sessions, it was only 15 minutes open, both teams were exceptionally loose, especially the Western New York Flash. We were talking to Riley, and all of a sudden, there was some, you know, hooting and hollering in the background, and he looked back and he said, "That's our team right there." So both teams were exceptionally loose. Most of my opinions about the media day are probably from a media perspective, which I'm sure your listeners don't care about. But yeah, everybody seems very pleased to be here. Everybody seems very pleased at how the event has grown a little bit from past finals, and that it now actually is a little bit of an event. And I do expect a good game. I do think both teams will play well.
You mentioned the conditions earlier on, obviously. The humidity and the heat is not something that they would have had in Washington when they overcame Chicago, in Portland when Western New York won there. How much of a factor do you think that will be? It's not something that I'm used to, being from England. The humidity is something that I've not experienced for quite some time. How's it going to be for those players when they turn out at BBVA?
I want to say not that big a deal. You know, it does get mighty hot and humid in Washington, D.C. for a much smaller, shorter portion of the calendar, but it gets pretty steamy down there over the summer, and it was a pretty dry summer in that part of the United States. You know, Western New York's a much different climate, but I feel like all these players have trained very hard, and they've all played at one time or another in adverse conditions. You know, in a general sense, again, you're not going to get a 120-minute track meet like we had in Portland the other day, but I don't think the conditions will really have too much of an impact on the actual game in terms of who wins or who's got more left in the tank at the end.
We spoke about Crystal Dunn as being Washington Spirit's potential game changer. We briefly mentioned Lynn Williams earlier, obviously named MVP of the league this week. We know she won the Golden Boot as well on a bit of a technicality with more assists, which, to be honest, I would have shared it with Kaylee Ojai, in my opinion. But how much of a difference can she make? How key will she be in trying to help the Western New York Flash over the line tomorrow?
Well, the fact that she was able to score twice in extra time the other day really, really, I really took note of that.
And she could have had more, couldn't she? She missed chances in normal time as well, didn't she?
She hit a crossbar, and I think Bedos got her twice, once maybe where it could have been a better shot, once where it was a really good save mm-hmm. by Bedos. And the fact that she was able to push through that and push through the fact that I don't know how often in her career she's played more than 90 minutes without a break, because, you know, remember, in college you can come off and go back on from time to time. I mean, she's remarkable. And her and McDonald together, you know, when I saw Williams as a rookie last season, and I admit I knew nothing about her going in, but she was quick. And that was the thing that everybody noticed, that she's quick. She comes back this season after microfracture surgery, I might add, and not only is she quick, but she can pass the ball, she can set up teammates, and she can fight through tackles and defenders and get herself in position on her own. So I think the sky's the limit at this point.
You mentioned the number of draftees that have come into the Western New York Flash over the last year, 18 months. The Washington Spirit have a fair few as well when you look at the likes of Whitney Church and Megan Oyster. Crystal Dunn is only in her third year as a professional, I think. How big are the experienced heads going to be in this game, in your view, the likes of Joe Lohman and Ali Krieger on the Spirit and McCall Zaborni in the Western New York Flash side? How key are they going to be in trying to guide these younger players through this final?
Well, I know that we like to talk about experience a lot, but let's go back to last Sunday. Look at all the experience on the Portland side. Right? How many of those players are world champions, play deep into the Olympics? Right, the Flash had no American Olympians, right? Sam Mewis was an alternate. That's it. They had D'Angelo played one game for Canada. So sometimes I think experience can be overrated. I think it's easy to say when that more experienced team wins that they needed it, and I think it's easy when the team without experience wins to make something up. Like, well, they were so young, they didn't even know that they were supposed to be under pressure. So personally, I think the experience you have is that whoever it is, whether it be Mackenzie Doniak or Kristen Hamilton or whoever it is that we think doesn't have a lot of experience, their experience is that they've trained for this since they were 8, 9, 10 years old. I'm sure all of them have played in big games in high school, college, what have you. Certain personalities tend to be more comfortable in front of big crowds with big trophies on the line, but I'm not sure experience has as much to do with it as the general public and press would like to have you believe.
No, it's a fair comment. I want to try and wrap it up. One of the things that I got from the media day, I spoke to Sam Mewis very briefly, and you're right, I think one of the perceptions that I got from the media day, I didn't attend the open training session, but I completely agree. The camaraderie within both squads is clearly there for all to see. There's clearly a very good relationship within the teams. I think they genuinely do get on with each other. I don't think it's a front at all. Sam Mewis said that one of the things that Paul Riley did when he came in was kind of create a us against the world mentality. And I will play that clip very quickly before getting your views. So here's Sam.
I give Paul so much credit. I think from day one, he wanted to cultivate this sense of, like, it's us against the world, and that's what he did. And I feel like we're kind of in this bubble where it's just us, and we're all so close inside that bubble, and we've made it so that no one else can really get in, and none of us can really get out. And Paul has just been an absolutely instrumental part of this whole thing, and I think that his impact on us has been so huge, and in a transition with a lot of changes from last year, it's all come together really nicely, and my teammates have been absolutely wonderful, and everyone's worked so hard, so I'm really proud of us.
So that was Sam talking about the us against the world kind of mentality that Paul Riley created. Do you think that could be what maybe pushes them over the line, the fact that you and I, I'm sure, didn't have them in the playoffs? I don't think many people did. It could well be that kind of mentality that we've been up against it the whole time. This is our chance, and this is what's going to get us over the line.
You know, our equalizer colleague Jennifer Gordon sent a tweet when Riley got hired saying something about him and the underdog mentality, and she keeps referencing it every time the Flash do something productive when they got into, like, first or second place and when they got into the playoffs, and I think she just retweeted it again a couple days ago when they got into the final. Every team is different, right? Every team needs some sort of motivation to go very mainstream American sports. Michael Jordan, maybe the most competitive person we've ever seen, would just come up with some sort of motivation every year to win a new title. Like, well, the assistant trainer who just got here doesn't have a ring. I got to get him a ring. Everybody needs something to look for. I didn't read the Carly Lloyd book, but knowing Carly Lloyd's personality, it almost seems like she goes and seeks out negative opinions about herself kind of subtly so that she has something to drive her. So if that's what drives the Flash, then that's good for them.
So final question, where's this game going to be won and lost? If I pushed you hugely, where would your money be going?
I think Spirit need to win the midfield, as I mentioned, and I would say that the Flash probably also need to win the midfield, because I don't know that the Flash can defend well. Here's how we look at it. I think it probably gets won and lost in the midfield, which is kind of cliche, but for different reasons. I feel like the Flash, if they get their speed out, will overwhelm the Spirit defense. I think the Spirit defense can handle the Flash if they don't get out in transition. I think that the Flash defense, if they're left to do a lot of work, will be in trouble. I mean, look at how many mistakes Sabrina D'Angelo made in that game. The one led to the equalizer by Sonnet, but she had a bad giveaway in the first minute, probably nerves, which she actually admitted during that media day. But remember, the Dahlkemper clearance off the line in the 122nd minute or whatever was also D'Angelo coming out and not getting her hand on the ball. And she made some good saves, but the decision-making could be suspect back there. So I think that the Spirit moved the ball around so well that creates almost a similar kind of scenario as the flash of speed does, because when you move the ball around, that almost simulates speed because it keeps people off balance. So it's whoever can win the midfield and get their forwards in a position to expose what are little weaknesses defensively on the other team. And I don't know if this is just because I've thought the Spirit would be good from day one and was laughed at a little bit when I picked them to win the Shield, and then they let me down by losing the last two, and I was wrong at the end of the day, but I'll go with a 2-1 Spirit win in a good game, but I don't think it'll compare to the semifinals. That's a tall order.
I think it's going to be a huge task to try and match those two semifinals. I'm with you. I think it's going to be a game that's won in midfield. I think it's going to be intriguing seeing Houston there in and Joe Lohmann up against Mewis and Ertzig. I think the forward lines, the pace in both is going to be key and how those defences come out on top. But yeah, we'll wrap it up there, mate. Your 10th, I believe. Is it your 10th?
10 out of 10.
Championship game, 10 out of 10 since the days of WUSA?
Been to all 10, and plus WPSL Elite. But the interesting thing about those 10 finals is I've never been to a semifinal game. Just usually it's because I'm putting my entire life on hold to go to the final, but there's never been a semifinal game close enough and convenient enough for me to attend. I might have gone down to Washington if it wasn't on Friday, but Friday is a tough order for me.
Well, I'm sure it's going to be an intriguing match, I'm sure, for you as well, having attended all the games. It's a nice opportunity to keep that run going. I'm going to, in terms of my prediction, it's tough. It's very, very tough. But based on the fact that you've gone for the Spirit, I might have to stick with the Brit and go with Paul Riley and the Western New York Flash. I think they might get... Would it be an upset? I think probably not as much based on how they performed against Portland last week. But it certainly will be an interesting game. Dan, I appreciate your time. Always a pleasure. Thank you very much, listeners, for tuning in. Enjoy the game tomorrow. I'm sure it's going to be an interesting one. We will have a review over the course of the week and look back at the NWSL as well in a podcast that we'll release in the next few days. So until then, take care of yourselves and bye-bye.